We are going to talk about what we can do to save the bees. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, June 27th. More than 40% of bees nationwide died off this season, according to data from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. We will talk with our guest about why this is, what problems bees face, and what the loss of bees will mean for our environment and our food supply. Plus, we will talk about what needs to be done to give bees a chance in the future. We talk about the future of bees, and we will welcome your questions. We'll welcome your own experiences at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Joining us, Shannon Leap, the Save the Bees campaign director with Wisconsin Environment, which is a citizen-based environmental advocacy project of Environment America. And she joins us in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming in. Also joining us is Nathan Clark, the owner of Mad Urban Bees, an urban beekeeping business based in Madison. And good morning to you.
Good morning.
All right. Thanks to both of you for being here. But let's start first with the problem that bees are facing. Shanna, what's going on here with 44% of bees nationwide dying off this season? What's happening?
Yeah, bees are definitely dying off at really unsustainable rates. And there are a few causes for these die-offs. Global warming is a huge one. Mites are really big. Loss of habitat. Another really big one is the use of bee-killing pesticides called neonicotinoids, or neonics for short. And this, the use of these pesticides are killing off, like you said, about 44% of our bees, which has pretty alarming consequences for our food supply as well.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about that. But Nathan, I wanted as a as a beekeeper, are you seeing this type of loss with your bee colonies?
I'm seeing loss, but I'm seeing it in different ways. I'm definitely, for the last few years, climate change, especially in Wisconsin, the last couple of really cold winters definitely impacted my hives. However, most of my hives are not in the rural areas. They're actually in the city of Madison and the surrounding, like Middleton and Monona. So my bees aren't affected by pesticides and ag chemicals the same way that a lot of our hives that produce food are in the same way.
Interesting. So this is seen more in a rural area, Shannon?
Yeah, I would say that it's a lot more pervasive in the larger sort of industrial agriculture sectors.
But Nathan, can you explain to us when we hear bee colony collapse, what that is exactly?
So one of the ways that I like to describe it is it's how we do large-scale agriculture in this country. It's the way we do monoculture, meaning that we have large areas where there's just one crop, like almonds, corn, and other crops like that. And we have to then move bees to those locations in order to pollinate them correctly. Without proper pollination, you don't get good crops. So because we have to move these bees around, they are exposed to a lot of things that stress them. Because they're only getting one crop at a time, they're nutritionally deficient, they're stressed from being on the road, they're exposed to a lot more diseases because you have a lot more bees together. I mean, think about like being on an airplane. You get exposed to a lot more potential for disease. And then you have because monocultures, there's a lot more chemicals used in large-scale monoculture, so pesticides, fungicides, and these are kind of like the thing that just has, especially in the last 50 years, has kind of tipped the balance with the bee population.
Yeah. And earlier, or last week, you held a news conference, Shannon, that the message was no bees, no food. This is a nationwide effort then to try to draw attention to this issue?
Yeah, it is. It's definitely a nationwide problem, and so it's going to take a nationwide effort to address. But of course, that comes first from the local people here in Madison and in cities all across the country, making their voices heard and wanting to save the bees here and around the country as well.
So talk more about this message, no bees, no food. It comes down to that.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. Bees pollinate about 70% of the foods that we eat, and some of our most important cash crops as well. So it's a pretty big economic issue as well.
Yeah, so paint us a picture of a world without bees. What would it look like?
It would be very sad. So bees pollinate everything from strawberries. You and I are drinking coffee. Bees pollinate coffee. Hops to brew beer.
Oh, no.
Yeah, exactly. alfalfa to feed dairy cows. So some pretty important local impacts in Wisconsin as well.
Well, that's, I mean, that is a, that's a startling message. And is it truly one that could come to fruition if nothing's done?
Yeah, I think if bees continue, if nothing is done, bees will continue to die off at the pretty alarming rates that they are currently dying off at. And there's just too much at stake for us to not do anything.
Well, what can we do?
So we at Wisconsin Environment are calling upon the EPA to stop the use of these bee-killing pesticides that I mentioned. And these pesticides have a pretty big connection between the bee die-off rates and the pesticide use. And so we as people can join Wisconsin Environment and Environment America in calling upon the EPA to stop the use of bee-killing pesticides. And there's petitions online. It's pretty simple.
Yeah, and any indication as to whether the EPA would back that effort to ban these pesticides?
Yeah, I believe President Obama recently spoke to the importance of our pollinators, and the EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy has also spoken to the importance of our pollinators. And so it's just a matter of making this a priority on the EPA's list, and doing things like building grassroots public support is a really good way to make that a priority.
Yeah. So, Nathan, some thoughts on banning these bee-killing pesticides?
I think banning is definitely a long-term goal. I think realistically, I mean, these neonicotinoids are the best-selling pesticides, especially for the large-scale agriculture in this country, and it's going to take you know, with our current political situation, nothing is going to happen quickly, unfortunately. So I think that we need to move to, you know, primarily reduction. I'm a big proponent for more biodiversity in our cropland. I mean, right now, you know, the majority of this country produces corn, wheat, and soybeans, you know, pretty much, and as far as land area for crops. And so we need more biodiversity in, you know, in our farms. I think banning is, I think it's going to be necessary in the long term. It's just as far as a short-term goal, I think it's going to be, and there's currently in the political climate, it's going to be a very heavy uphill battle.
Yeah. And Nathan, is there something, is there something I can do besides sign a petition? Is there something that an individual can do to help save the bees?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Don't spray your lawn. That's probably the easiest thing that the average person can do is when the Chem Lawn or the Green Lawn people come up and, you know, say, hey, we're spraying your neighborhood, and say, no, I want to save the bees, you know, I want to support the bees. Because the other thing is that the majority of those crops that we're talking about are food crops, are pollinated partially by honeybees, but there are also trees like apples, a lot of our stone fruits are pollinated by a lot of native bees that we don't see, that they actually live in the ground. And by spraying our yards, we actually kill off their habitat. So so by not spraying your lawn, yes, you will have some dandelions, but dandelions are actually one of the fantastic food source, both in pollen and nectar, for all pollinating insects in early spring.
We will talk about other ways we can save the bees with our two guests, and we will welcome your questions and your experiences, your ideas, your concerns. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We are talking about an effort to save the bees with Shannon Leap, who is the Save the Bees Campaign Director with Wisconsin Environment, and Nathan Clark, who is the owner of Mad Urban Bees in Madison. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with two guests about efforts to save the bees. Our guests are Shannon Leap, the Save the Bees Campaign Director with the Wisconsin Environment, a citizen-based environmental advocacy project of Environment America, and Nathan Clark, the owner of Mad Urban Bees, an urban beekeeping business based in Madison. Our conversation is prompt in part by a news conference held last week on saving the bees. It was the No Bees, No Food news conference, which aimed to show that just that, that if we lose our bees, we'll lose our food. We're talking about what needs to be done to save our bees, and we're welcoming your questions. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let's take some calls. We have Bill in Madison with us first. Hello, Bill.
Hi. Yeah, I got to say that the real change happens at the consumer level, and American consumers need to, you know, realize that perfect apples don't happen without a lot of fertilizer and a lot of pesticides. And, you know, the perfect lawn is actually a pollinator desert. And actually a good, healthy lawn with clover and dandelions is much easier to take care of than a perfectly just grass lawn, because the clover fixes nitrogen, it feeds the grass.
Now, I have plenty of clover in my lawn right now, I can attest to. Thank you, Bill. But Nathan, you were just talking about how one thing we can do as individuals is to stop using pesticides on our lawns. Do we also have to accept that apples are going to not be perfect looking?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, we need, as consumers, we need to, you know, look locally. I mean, that's one of the things I really enjoy about living in Madison, is we have such a focus on local food in this town. And part of that is, the perfect looking apple may not actually be the tastiest apple, and actually the, you know, and the fact that those apples do need not just honeybees, but a lot of the other native bees that exist in our area to help really get those nice looking apples.
You know, we heard a news report in our news at the top of the hour from Shemaine Mills, who covered the news conference last week, but also got a response from the Wisconsin Farm Bureau, and a spokesperson acknowledged that bees are important to several crops grown in Wisconsin, including apples and cranberries and cucumbers, and I guess was also making the statement that that if we ban the pesticides that you want us to ban, we're not going to be able to produce those crops in the amounts and in the condition that we do now. Shannon, what do you say about that?
Yeah, if we ban the use of these pesticides, well, first of all, cranberries, I think, are one of the few crops in Wisconsin that are not regulated in terms of the pesticides used on them. And so, sure, if we use these pesticides, they will affect the pollinator populations, which, okay, we'll grow cranberries because we'll have these pesticides, but then we can't grow cranberries because we don't have the pollinators to pollinate the cranberries. So I think that's what I would say to that.
Yeah. Gary on Facebook says, I wouldn't jump out of the window quite yet. If you are a beekeeper who is losing 40% of your bees and don't know what to do about it, one simple solution would be to raise 40% more bees to make up the difference. Nathan, what do you say to that?
I think that we do need local sustainability for bees. It's one of the things I'm doing with my business is I am starting to raise my own queen bees. But because of, in comparison to other parts of the country, you know, we have a shorter growing season, and that also means a shorter time frame for growing new hives. Most of the bees that are, when we have to, like, if you lose 40% of your bees and you have to buy 40% more, again, a lot of those bees are coming from California or Florida, and with the decline in the bee population, those bees are getting more expensive. So we may not run out of bees, but we may run out of beekeepers, because a lot of local beekeepers are not set up for sustainability of our own bees in the long term.
Yeah. We are talking about the problems facing bees and what we can do about those problems. We're welcoming your concerns, your questions, your own experiences. Maybe you're a beekeeper. What do you do to help your hives thrive? What concerns do you have? Are you someone who trying to help save the bees? Are you planting certain plantings? Are you not using chemicals on your yard and lawn? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Mike in Castle Rock is with us now. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. I think the whole insect population is collapsing. And I'll tell you, just take a look at the cars that you see. It used to be that the windshields needed cleaning when you went to the gas station. And of course, this was a long time ago. Someone came out and cleaned the windshield. But, that doesn't happen anymore. You know, I live in the country here, and there isn't even any flies.
Huh. Boy,
and just the bees.
I guess I had quite the opposite experience driving the other day in northern Wisconsin. Boy, I couldn't even see out of my windshield. However, what about the thought that insects in general are suffering from whatever bees are suffering from, Shannon?
I'd be able to speak to pollinators in general. I know that neonicotinoids affect bees. They also affect other pollinators like butterflies, and in terms of general insect diets, I wouldn't be able to speak to that too much.
But butterflies and other pollinators are also dying off, or we're seeing losses in those areas too.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Nathan, you have a response or a reaction?
Yeah, I mean, a neonicotinoid is the reason it's the word nic is in there. It's nicotine. It's a tobacco-based pesticide. So this nicotine is a neurotoxin for insects. That's why the tobacco plant produces it, and that's why we use it in agriculture, because it kills insects. So yeah, these chemicals don't just affect bees; they affect everything. So the honeybees are really the canary in the coal mine to what's going on with our insect and pollinator populations.
Talk a little bit more about why you say they're the canary in the coal mine.
Well, honeybees were brought over by European settlers. They are they're technically a non-native species to North America. So, you know, and they're one of the few species of bee that is domesticated. I think there's like in North America, there's about three species of bees that we've domesticated for large crop production, and there are over 300 species of bee in, I think, in just Wisconsin, I believe. So it's just the amount of, you know, they're the ones that we're paying attention to. So we don't see the solitary bees. We don't have enough research going on to monitor their populations. So in a lot of ways, we don't know the full impact that these are having. I mean, monarch butterflies, I think, are a great example of, you know, now that we are killing off milkweed in all of our cornfields because of the use of Roundup, the monarch butterfly population has crashed. So that's something that we really notice and we can see, but there's a lot of other insects out there that we just aren't keeping records on.
Let's go to another call. Sue in Dunn is with us. Hello, Sue.
Hello, how are you?
Good. What is your experience as a beekeeper, I understand?
Yeah, I've been keeping bees for 15 years now. And well, fortunately, I'm in the town of Dunn, where I think most of the people practice respectful and more organic practices. And my situation is a little more stable. I think Nathan, hi, Nathan, Sue Richard, how you doing?
Beekeepers know each other.
Yeah. And I think his experience being in town is he has the pretty yard people, you know, with its spray. Out here, I'm looking out at a yard full of clover. It's beautiful. You know? So I really do think it has a lot to do with the insecticides that are used, especially in the urban areas. What do you think?
Insecticides in urban areas a primary cause, Nathan?
No, actually, I would disagree with that because, you know, you'll have small areas like in people's yards, which are primarily herbicides that people are spraying on their lawns, which would take away the food source of the clover and the dandelions. But actually, in the urban area, I was on the Pollination Protection Task Force from the Food Policy Council, and one of the things that we discovered was how few pesticides the city actually uses. So all of the city actually has a tremendous amount of trees that we use for the shade trees, linden, basswood. These are huge food sources for bees. So I think the difference is also scale, because if you have someone who's putting a few things on their roses or on a few of their vegetables, that's percentage-wise, as far as land area, I think we actually get less pesticide exposure, I think, per acre than potential other areas when you have fence post farming out in the rural area.
Mm-hmm. Do you have anything to add, Shannon?
No, I agree with Nathan, yeah.
Let's go to Karen next in Appleton. Hi, Karen.
Hi. Hey, I'm wondering if your guest is familiar with neem oil. We've been using it on our fruit trees at the end of last year and the beginning of this year. They were planted 3 years ago, bare roots, so they're just starting to come into their own. And I'm wondering, the neem oil, it is based from a neem tree, I guess, in India, but it's to prevent insects eating the leaves before the trees can fruit out. I'm just wondering if that would affect the pollinators.
I know that Shannon shook her head that she's not familiar with the neem oil. Are you, Nathan?
I've heard it being used as a helping out with to avoid certain kinds of pests with fruit trees, but I'm not a gardener.
Yeah.
On that scale.
There's no, as far as you know, it's don't use these bee killing pesticides, but there aren't alternatives that are better for the bees?
I think there's definitely alternatives. It's just a matter of, anything like farming, you have, such a narrow margin for success and for failure. So with some of these organic products, they are fantastic, but they are cost-effective in your yard, but not when you start getting into the orchard or farm field scale. So I think that's one of the issues there.
Yeah. Also wanted to ask you about other efforts. You talked about don't use these bee-killing pesticides on our own lawns. Are there things we can plant that will make the bees happy and help save the bees in any way, Nathan?
Oh, absolutely. Any sort of wildflower mix, butterfly mix that you can get from any your local garden supply stores. You know, just having a small area in your yard that you have being a natural, natural lawn. Prairie plants also are great for pollinators. Ornamentals, things like sage or there's a lot of goldenrod, asters, black-eyed Susans. There's so many sedum, butterfly weed. These are all beautiful plants that look great in your yard, and also provide a great food source for the insects.
Yeah, and is it true that I do have a good reason to let those dandelions alone on my lawn?
Yes, especially what I like to tell people is that, you know, let that first batch of dandelions bloom and then go ahead and mow them over. But get that first one out, especially in late April, early May, is important.
Let's go next to Melanie in Polk County. Hi, Melanie.
Hi, Joy. I live out in the country. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, yeah, I live out in the country. I have a couple acres, and 1 acre I opened up flat, and so I've got enormous amount of native prairies from a supplier, shrubs, flowers, grasses, and I just cannot believe the insects and pollinators I'm getting in my full second year. But what I am interested in is approaching the local county or town to try and get them to stop mowing the sides of the roads. I can't believe the amount of pollinators that get mowed down, not to mention the turtles and the frogs and all the other things that are killed. But is there a resource to help us to do that? I know there are some states that have stopped mowing sides of roads, and there's a lot of data to support that. Do you have any information on that, I guess, that we can move forward?
Shannon, let me ask you first to address the problem, if it is a problem for the pollinators, of mowing the roadsides. Is it a problem for the pollinators?
Yeah, I would imagine so, in that it would remove their food sources. And I also want to applaud Melanie in taking it beyond just your personal yard and really trying to create some systemic change in your own community. And I would suggest going to like a town council meeting, or I'm not too familiar with the structure of your local government, but I think that taking it beyond your personal yard, which is also certainly important, and in going beyond there is a noble step in the right direction.
Yeah, and I know that the city of Madison apparently is going to reduce mowing in parks and other areas up to 1,500 acres. So some communities recognize that this is a problem and are going to reduce mowing. Do you have anything to add to how citizens can get their local governments to act on this, Nathan?
Yeah, I think that, you know, being active in the local government is really important, because with the Pollination Protection Task Force that Madison created, that's where, you know, we did recommendations for the Park Service. Then the county has adopted very similar policies, and then on the state level. But because each municipality has, you know, jurisdiction in its area, and there's not as much overlap as I think we would all like, I think, you know, trying to, you know, get an ordinance or a practice, you know, at least in front of, you know, your highway department, your parks department, in order to get that conversation going. And I think once you start having that dialogue, these sort of changes do become easier.
Kent says, in Europe, there are flowers in cities everywhere. We need more urban flowers for the pollinators. We have just a minute before a news break. Nathan, do you agree?
I agree.
And do you agree, Shannon? And what can we do to get more urban flowers?
Yeah, urban flowers are great. The EU is also... they banned neonicotinoids, and so we can follow in their direction as well in that way.
Shannon Leap is the Save the Bees campaign director with Wisconsin Environment, and Nathan Clark is the owner of Mad Urban Bees, an urban beekeeping business based in Madison. We are talking with them about the problems that bees face and what we can do to save the bees and other pollinators. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org if you have a question or a concern or a suggestion. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about efforts to save the bees here in Wisconsin and nationwide. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with Shannon Leap, who is the Save the Bees campaign director with Wisconsin Environment, which is urging the federal government to ban the pesticides that can harm bees. And we are talking with Nathan Clark, who is the owner of Mad Urban Bees and Urban Beekeeping Business based in Madison. And we are talking about ways we can help save the bees. We're wondering if you have questions or concerns or your own ideas about that. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. 44% of bees nationwide died off this season, according to data from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. We've been talking with our guests about the problems that bees face, including these pesticides and climate change issues and others, talking about what the loss of these insects will mean for our environment and our food supply. No bees, no food was the message of a news conference last week, and what they think needs to be done to give to help save the bees. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org if you have a question for either of our guests. We had Morgan on Facebook says, we've worried about monoculture of our crops, but what about the monoculture of our bees? They aren't the only pollinators. We are relying too hard on honeybees while we have mason bees and bumblebees and thousands of other species. We shouldn't put all of our eggs in one basket by relying on less than a half dozen species of pollinators. Do you want to address that, Nathan?
Yes, the honeybees are definitely, we have you could say an over-reliance on them. However, they're the easiest ones to work with. We've tried to cultivate bumblebees in some ways, and I've heard mixed reports on how that goes. I mean, you can pick up a honeybee hive one night, move it overnight to a different location, set it down, and the bees just kind of reorient themselves and keep doing their work. So we have a relationship with these insects for some very good reasons. The fact that they have huge numbers, they do a large-scale pollination, they produce a ton of honey in comparison to other insects, and we could move them around.
Mm-hmm. Shannon, anything to add to that? And at the beginning of the show, we did talk about the problems facing bees, including these the bee killing pesticides. We talked about climate change issues, and very briefly, mites. Ken emailed to ask if both of you could further address the effect of mites and whether something more needs to be done about the mites that apparently plague the bees. Nathan.
Yeah, so what we're talking about is the Varroa mite. It is the Latin is Varroa destructor, so that's what we think of.
Wow.
It. It's a parasitic mite that came over from Asia in the mid-90s and devastated the honeybee population. And commercially, they attempted to treat it with chemicals, and it was overall we created stronger mites in the long run and not stronger bees. So we need to breed honeybees that can actually manage their mites better, and this is a more of a long-term process because the mites evolve faster than we're evolving the honeybees. But one of the issues with the migratory beekeeping and the mites is that a lot of times they'll treat the bees with antibiotics for diseases while they're being transported. Unfortunately, that makes them more vulnerable to the viruses that the mites carry further in the year. So it's kind of it's a downward spiral process of treating the bees for one thing makes them vulnerable to another, transporting them makes them vulnerable other ways. So it's kind of all these factors together. And so mites are, in my opinion, not separate from colony collapse. They're actually a pretty big cornerstone in the colony collapse cycle.
Mm-hmm. Shannon?
I think that it also speaks to the use of pesticides would create pests that are resistant to those pesticides and create, you know, then we start to need to use more pesticides that are stronger, and it's kind of a snowball effect. And so I think that's what I would have to say about that.
So earlier this year, Ortho, which is part of the Miracle-Gro family, said it's going to stop using pesticides that are linked to the decline of bees. Are you at all surprised by that, Shannon? I assume you celebrate that news.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's great. I think that recently there's been a lot of sort of public outcry about the loss of bees that we're suddenly kind of facing. And it's definitely come more into the public discourse. And I think that companies like Ortho, other companies like Home Depot and Lowe's, several restaurant chains like BJ's, are also saying that they are no longer going to be selling. They're also phasing out products that are treated with neonicotinoids. And so they're listening to us. And it's important that we keep this momentum going, but that we also have it on a more standardized scale, which is why we are going to the EPA.
So, yes, you are, to repeat that, you're asking people to sign a petition to direct the EPA or to advise the EPA that to ban these chemicals. But when you said Lowe's and other Home Depot are banning, what, plants that have been treated with these neonicotinoids?
Yeah, I think they're not so much banning them yet. They're more phasing it out. But they're phasing out plants that are treated with these pesticides, because you can get seeds that are actually dipped in the neonicotinoids, and then it permeates the entire plant. And so that's what they are starting to phase out.
I see. Well, that Nathan, that's promising.
It's a good start, especially when people are, you know, buying plants to attract pollinators to the yard. We don't want those same plants to then kill said pollinators.
Yeah. So how is the EPA... I know your news conference was just last week, but presumably this idea has been out there for a little bit. How is the EPA reacting to a call to ban the pesticide?
I don't think we've gotten an official response yet, but there was a big rally in D.C. at the EPA headquarters just last week as well, in conjunction with the press conference that we had here in Madison. And I think I would echo what Nathan said earlier, is that this is definitely not going to be an easy fight, because there are big chemical companies that are pretty actively advocating to increase the use of these pesticides. And so that's why we need to really keep up the pressure on the EPA to make sure that they do listen to the people.
Yeah.
Who will be buying the food that is pollinated by bees.
Brandy on Facebook says, if you live in an apartment with no deck, you can't plant flowers. How else can you help the bees? All right, Nathan, how do you? What can Brandy do?
Well, if you live in the Madison area, I do a honey CSA, so it's a great way to support the local bees and get some great tasting honey throughout the year. But I think also focusing on buying locally. So go to a farmer's market, support the farmers, support the beekeepers that support those local farmers, I think is really important. Know where your food comes from.
Yeah. Well, talk about how your honey CSA will help save the bees.
Well, for my business, one of my focuses is on sustainability. So I am in an effort to create a local bees that can repopulate right here rather than having to go outside of the state in order to resupply bees. So I'm like this year, I supplied about 30 other beekeepers with local bees to get started for the year.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're almost out of time. Let me ask both of you, starting with Shannon, what do you see as the future of bees? Are you optimistic?
Yeah, I am. I think we have to be. I think that if we aren't, then we will give up. And I do think that we're moving in the right direction. There are several states, Oregon, Maryland just passed, or the legislature in Maryland just passed a bill to ban neonicotinoids. It's happening, and it's important that we build on that momentum and continue to make it happen.
Ah, and in our final minute, Nathan, what about you? How optimistic are you that we will save the bees?
I'm optimistic because it starts right here at home. I think that, you know, here in Wisconsin, you know, locally, we're going to make changes in order to live healthier lives, and then that is just going to move forward and make some big changes in the end.
Thank you both very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Nathan Clark is the owner of Mad Urban Bees, an urban beekeeping business based in Madison. And Shannon Leap is the Save the Bees campaign director with Wisconsin Environment, which is a citizen-based environmental advocacy project of Environment America. Coming up next, we will talk with former DNR Secretary George Meyer at how the DNR is responding to a recent critical legislative audit. That's coming up in the first half of our state capitol report in our next hour. Thanks to producers Marika Suval, Brianne Chasso, and Elizabeth Delaquest. And thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.